Okay, how's everyone feeling?
Never better.
Yeah, I'm like kind of done.
Well, hang in there.
Yeah, I know. Only however many more weeks we have of this. But at least the weather's nice, and I have a backyard, so that's helpful. You guys all, I hope, got that email. And I've read that about us pushing Shell Lab back a little bit. Does that make everybody feel a little bit better?
How? I didn't get that email. Well, I mean, I probably did. I just didn't check my email.
If you haven't checked your email yet, we pushed the due date back to Monday. So to Monday night instead of tomorrow night, which I think will help some of you with a little bit of anxiety about that. I know I've been getting a lot of emails that are like, how do I even get the motivation to do this? Like, I can't help you with, but we think that it's like a really important lab, and actually of everything we do in the class this semester, even if you think this is like the least fun thing, it is the lab that does the most to set you up for success in like other CSI classes. Specifically, I think the stuff that you're going to be doing in operating systems, if you don't have a strong grasp of some of this stuff, this memory stuff and the processes and forking and some of the synchronization stuff, like OS is going to be a lot harder on you. OS gets intense with this stuff. So having this like grasp on the shell lab stuff will, even though it's like a pain and like not really gamified the way that we gamify some of the other stuff in the class, it really is like the most important thing that you'll do. So even though it's hard to like get going on stuff right now and everything is different and new and weird, we do think it's like really important for you guys to put some work into it and try and get as much done as you can. And we're still gonna have help hours. I might not do full help hours today. I'm really tired. But I'll definitely be in again tomorrow. And can certainly answer questions by email. So come to help hours, go to visit the help desk. They are there as well. And probably kind of bored. So yeah, does anyone have questions about that? Hopefully you're like at that point in Shell Lab where you're just doing really annoying debugs or trying to figure out why something's not working. Everybody goes through that. That's just part of coding. But we can help you. So don't feel like you have to take that on entirely by yourself. You definitely don't. Any questions? Are your other classes going? They're okay?
About the same.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I like to think that even though we're still working on Shell Lab stuff, this memory. The memory stuff we're doing right now, the chapter six stuff, if you haven't started reading it yet, that's okay. Just try and get to that, I would say, sometime this weekend. We don't go super into chapter six. So if you are someone who is like accustomed to doing the problems at the end of the chapter, you'll see like a lot of intense like math. But don't worry, we're not going to test you on any of that. So if you do that, that's just for your own benefit or for fun. I don't know what everybody's doing for fun these days. Maybe it's math. So don't get scared by that. We're going to touch on like basic, really the more conceptual parts of the memory hierarchy and some of the like virtualization stuff and leave it at that. And you'll get more into depth, like I said, again, with that stuff in OS like pretty quickly. So I think this is like kind of, like I said, even though we're still working on Shell Lab stuff, I do think this is like kind of a little brain break. And honestly, get through Shell Lab, like put as much effort as you can into it. Once we get into a TAC lab, it's gonna feel like a break for your brain, which is gonna be nice. It's gonna be like kind of a fun lab. Again, people tend to like a TAC lab. It's another one of those labs like bomb lab where there's no long write-up. So you're not going to be like going through and commenting a bunch of stuff. And then you have, you know, a lot of the end of the semester we'll have to like deal with reviewing and maybe like solidifying some of the stuff that we're not so steady on before the final. And that'll be nice because I'm sure your other classes will like continue to ramp up throughout the end of the semester, and we kind of do our ramp up now and then a little bit of a cool down, which I think that our students tend to be into. Okay, let me okay, so we talked a little bit about this last time, about this graph, which shows this access time of different memory devices and of the CPU. And we talked a little bit about how that is trending into like faster access speed, especially if you look at like the CPU. It's getting just like exponentially faster as time goes by. You'll see though, and I think Michael asked about this last time, so we talked about it a little bit, but I did a little bit of reading, and we have this difference between like our CPU cycle time and our effective CPU cycle time that Michael asked about, like, well, what is this? And I know we talked a little bit about like having that bottleneck as far as like speed that comes with having a slower DRAM, which is where the CPU gets all of our instructions that it executes from. But another thing that this is showing here, which is actually pretty interesting, is when we hit 2003, you can see there's like that little split there. And the reasoning for that is that at some point, like obviously, I mean, maybe this isn't obvious actually, I don't think it was obvious to me, but if you think about machines and computing, you have this trade-off between like how quickly things can happen and how much computation is happening and the energy that is expended, right? So when we started getting into like much faster processors, it also turned out that we were like using a lot of energy and expending quite a bit of heat. So at that point, it became pretty much, it got to the point where we had to make a choice between you know, continuing to have these really fast processors and then like how do we cool down our computers enough that they're like usable. And the solution for that ended up actually being that we have to our processor speed, if you can see those little that square line, the CPU cycle time has remained the same. The reason the effective CPU cycle time is decreasing still is that we started splitting up those processors onto like separate cores, right? So now we have like multiple cores, and effectively we have this faster CPU cycle time because we can now run several programs concurrently, and we have like parallel computing. So that's why that's still getting faster. And everything is kind of, you can see like SRAM is pretty much keeping up with that. DRAM is still, DRAM is like quite a bit slower than this processing capacity that we currently have. And it's actually like has not been increasing very quickly. So that we also talked about, right? Uh-oh, my arrows aren't gonna work. Okay, so that we also talked about a little bit about how our CPU can do all of this like computational work and can execute all these instructions per second. And then we have our, our DRAM who it's like I'm creating this human out of DRAM. Our DRAM is where we get instructions to execute, where the CPU gets like instructions to execute. And as we saw in that graph, DRAM is significantly slower than our processor speed. So here's that bottleneck, right? And when we talked about this, this is like the conundrum here. How do we solve this problem? How can we actually utilize the speed of the CPU when we have this slower memory device that's kind of keeping us down? So today we're going to talk a little bit about that and a solution for that, like, helps with that dilemma. And that is going to be locality, right? So did we talk about locality at all last time?
Nope.
Okay, cool. So we didn't get into that at all. That's
is that, what chapter is this one? I think this is the end of chapter 8 now.
This part, I know, I think this is still in chapter 6. I think we're all in chapter 6 now. Although my book is stuck in my office, I'm like, I think Matt just liberated it for me yesterday. So I haven't been able to like review that what's actually in each chapter, but I think this is still in chapter 6. Somebody can correct me if I'm actually wrong, if you want to like pull out your book right now. So,
okay.
So if we remember from that first, that intro lab where, well, actually I'm not going to introduce that yet. We'll come back to that. So locality is this concept that allows us to kind of make our memory access more efficient and take advantage of these higher CPU speeds. And then we have a couple of different kinds of, so this is actually, this is a good definition for locality here.
So 6.2.
6.2. Okay, there we are. So this is all chapter 6 stuff. So programs tend to use data and instructions with addresses near or equal to those that they have used recently. We have two kinds of locality. So we've got temporal locality, which is that recently referenced items are likely to be referenced in the near future. You can think about things like, if you think about like a variable, if we are modifying a variable, it's likely to be either modified more than once or modified and then read, things like that. Or if you think about things like if you have some variable in a for loop that you're constantly modifying, like that is getting accessed again and again, like in shorter period of time. And I think that there was a real world example of this that Matt gave in the first section that was something like, and this makes sense for sure, something like if you have stuff on your desk and you have things that are on top and you're more likely to be working with that stuff that's on top and accessing that more than like all the things at the bottom of that pile that are like older projects or whatever else you might have piled on your desk. And then we also have spatial locality. So spatial locality is that items with nearby addresses tend to be referenced close together in time. I think some good examples of this, or some examples that we're definitely going to talk about, are things like accessing like different indices in an array. As we know, like in C, those are the indices in array are just data that are close to each other in memory, right? They have addresses that are close together. So those are likely to be referenced like near each other. We also have things like instruction sets. Like, so if you're thinking about like some instruction set in assembly, it's all near each other in memory. Obviously there's like a high chance that you're going to be accessing that stuff together in a short period of time. Any questions so far? Okay, cool. Okay, sorry, I need to adjust my screen a little so I can see this. All right, so let's look at this example that we have here of locality. We had this like really simple little bit of code. All we're doing is like, running through an array and summing all of its elements together. So if we look at, we've got two different references here. We've got references to data and we have instruction references. If we were talking about referencing the array elements in succession, what kind of locality do you guys think that would be?
Spatial.
Yeah. So like we just talked about, like we just talked about those, that those indices in the array are right next to each other in memory. So we are just iterating through that array. We're just like kind of moving through that memory. And let's say these are ints, so we would move through it in like 4-byte. I don't want to say jumps because I don't want you to think that it's jumping, but you understand what I mean there. Okay, let's talk about how we reference the variable sum each iteration. What kind of locality will that be? Anyone? Right, so we're like accessing this variable again and again and again for every iteration through this for loop. So that one is actually going to be temporal locality, right? Because we've accessed it, we're likely to access that variable again in some short period of time. Let's think about this little snippet of code as like a set of instructions. So we are referencing the instructions in this instruction set in sequence, right? And remember looking at like something in like GDB or just like writing some little bit of assembly code and how those instructions are like laid out in memory, right? So as we reference these instructions in sequence, that will be, anyone?
Temporal?
Spatial.
That one is gonna be spatial. So I think it's helpful to think about the fact that each of these instructions, right? And this is probably not very many instructions, this is really simple code. But each of these instructions are in memory, and they're in memory like right next to each other, right? Remember how when you move through the debugger, you can see how that assembly is like laid out, and you could access different instructions based on memory. So that's actually spatial locality, but cycling, and I think this is like where this gets a little bit confusing, cycling through that loop repeatedly, which is probably what you were thinking of, because we're doing this again and again and again, that's going to be temporal locality, right? So that, when we talk about like instruction sets, like that loop and running the instruction set more than once is that temporal locality. Okay. So let's look at this little example here. This should look familiar, right? So we, at the very beginning of the semester when you guys did the intro lab, right? We had that question that everybody had a question about because you're like, how am I supposed to know this? I have no clue. And we're like, well, just do some reading and try and make an educated guess, where we ask you, we give you these two examples of a very similar, tiny differences in these arrays, and we have you check the runtimes for them, right? And you notice that like, even though they look basically the same, that one is like significantly slower than the other. You guys remember that? And we're like, why is this happening? And you're like, I don't know, stop, please help.
Yeah, I remember.
So let's take a look at this array right here. Does anybody have any idea why this may or may not have good locality with respect to this array A?
Isn't it because in the first for loop using A instead of I and deeper in the memory?
So yeah, I think we're on the right track there for sure. So let's think about what array A would look like in memory, right? So like in C, we're gonna lay out that array row-wise, right? So right there we've got I is our rows, J is our columns. This is actually, I think, a good place to like kind of help draw this out, because this is kind of an important concept, and I find it really difficult to grasp without being able to like something. So,
yeah, what you're saying is 0-1 and 0-2 are next to each other rather than 1-0.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So,
sorry about that.
No worries. Okay, so let's say we have this and this. I'm gonna do this with a two-dimensional array because it's because I watched Matt try and draw a three-dimensional array on this whiteboard and it seemed terrible. Okay, so let's say we have this array here and we've got we've got like i0 and blah, 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 blah. Dot, I'm just not making dots, but, and then we've got J here, right? Okay, so we've got our J columns. This is very, very ugly, but also kind of zen. Okay, so we've got our columns, we've got our rows. When we have this array let out in memory, so let's remember, and I'm sorry that I can't show you both of those things at the same time, but when we look back, I think it'll help you. So we have all our elements in I laid out here in a row, and then we've got our columns J. So if we are looking at, if we're accessing this array A, we want to be accessing this row more. We want to be do all those accesses before we change J, right? So if we look at that that locality example that we just saw, because of the way that those for loops are nested, the I for loop is going to entirely iterate before any of the elements in J change, right? So we're holding J constant and we're iterating through I. So we're moving across each of these elements and accessing each element of this array in order, which is like the best that we can do for memory access here. So we've got like, we're going to do all of our J0 row, and then we'll move to one and go across that way like that. So that is like what we want. That's good stuff. Actually, this is backwards from what I thought it was. We can use that same, I don't know how to get you back to this. Are you guys seeing the slide right now?
No.
Okay. Okay. There we go. Now are you seeing the slide? No? Yes? Sorry, this is the slide that we were on. So this is actually reverse from what I thought how it was listed. So here what we're doing, remember that thing that I just drew? So here what we're actually doing is, can anybody tell me why this would not be good?
Wasn't this the one we were just looking at?
Yeah, except this is actually the one that we were just looking at because this is what I thought was laid out for us. So this is the one that we were just looking at. This is good because what we're doing here, and you can look at this, I don't know, can you see my cursor? Nope.
Yes.
So you can look at this inner for loop. We have to iterate through all of that before we change anything in I, right? And we're accessing, in general, as a rule of thumb, you want to access this like right index and change all of that first. Does that make sense?
So the inner for loop is the one that's being accessed first?
Yes. Because we have to go through, before we change anything in I, we go through all of this like J through N in J. Then we change I, and then we change all of the elements for that next row.
Heard that.
Did I just confuse you guys all? Does anybody have, I feel like you should have questions about that because this is like a weird. So think about it this way. We've got this array A where we have I rows and J columns. We're going to go through, we're going to hold I steady and move through each each element in that row before we change and go on to the next row. So if we have does that make sense? I feel like I don't know how else to explain it unless somebody has like an actual question or tells me that what I'm saying is like confusing.
I think it's pretty clear.
So the other option would be, and this is what we looked at here, is we would be doing, oh, nope, where's my whiteboard? We would be doing something like, we would be doing something like this. So we would start here, right? And we would change, we would access this index and then we would skip all the way to this next one. So we would be skipping all of this memory. Think about how efficient it would be to like access memory that way rather than just going across memory, right? So then we have to go back and do it again. So then we have to like go here, skip all of this, access this. So hopefully that like helps illustrate like why one is good and one is like very bad.
Could you go back to the slides that we just had? Yeah.
Let's see, can I? There we go.
Okay, so the array int A, M, N, then you have I and J defined inside of it. You want to have, ideally, the farthest right letters, variables, in the innermost for loop.
Yeah, that is, like, the, like, kind of, I don't want to say tricky, but that is, like, the way to think about it. That's, like, an easy, like, check. Because as I said before, you want to be doing all of this access with this element first before you move on and change this one. And that like will massively affect the performance and the efficiency of your program.
That makes sense.
Okay, cool. Okay, so if we feel good about this, wait, I want to see what examples you guys are putting in the chat. The rows themselves. So it's because the elements in our, I think this is the answer to the question. It's because the elements of the array get laid out like row wise. So all the elements that are in the same row are close to each other in memory, and then it moves on to the next column. And let's see what Russell's saying. And bookshelves in number of rooms. Yeah, so that's a good example too. Yeah, that's actually a really good example, Russell. So if you had a bunch of bookshelves if you had M bookshelves and N number of rooms, it's way easier to stay in one room and count all the books in that room than it is to like move room to room and count one book per bookshelf as you go. Like it's so much more efficient to do all of your counting in that one room. Nice work. Okay, so I think we can move on. Okay, so why is this important? This is it is really important if you are a programmer to be able to have this sense of being able to look at code and understand whether or not it has good locality. And I think that the reasons for that are like pretty obvious. You want to be the kind of programmer who is writing not just code, which is like what I write, just code, and writing good code or efficient code, code that performs well. You see people get like dragged on, what is that website called where you look things up? What a great example. But you know, where we all ask like code questions, Stack Overflow, thank you. This quarantine's really affecting my brain. That's my excuse at least. But you see people getting dragged and people saying things like, wow, that's really bad code. The way that you're writing that is, I mean, people aren't nice on Stack Overflow. So you can get dragged pretty hard if your code is inefficient or just poorly written in some way. And this is one of these like fundamental things that good programmers should be able to do, is be able to write code that performs very efficiently. And part of that is that we do have these limitations when it comes to memory, that we need to try and we have to try and bridge that gap as best we can with our programming. So this is actually really important. And honestly, if you think about it, it's not that hard. It's not like a super hard concept to understand. Even if you were just to remember that little memory access trick where you want to be accessing this guy very often, at least in C, I'm not sure if array memory, how it's laid out in every other language, but for now. Okay, well, let's see. I keep trying to press the arrow and that's not working. Okay, so now let's get a little bit more complicated. So can you permute the loop so that the function scans the 3D array A with a stride 1 reference pattern and thus has good spatial locality? So we didn't really talk about what a stride 1 reference pattern is, but that is, if we think back to that whiteboard, give me one second. Oh man, it's gone. Oh, there it is. Okay. So if we think back to, hold on, I'm sorry, I'm having technical. If we think back to this whiteboard example and we are moving through each of the elements in this array like so, that is a stride 1 reference movement, because we're moving one array at a time. If we were to look at that bad example of locality, we would be moving like this, right? So it would be, let's say it's N, that would be stride in, because we'd be jumping that much in memory for each step. So that's what stride 1 means. Does anybody have an idea of how this is either good or could be improved? Whoops, sorry, I meant to jump back to that. Man, Zoom, really getting me today. There we go.
What's the question?
Let's look at this code. So how could you permute this so that it has good spatial locality? It has that reference pattern that we're looking for. Let me see, we've got chatter.
I don't know, this looks like it fits the format that we had just discussed.
So
what, at the very end, you would have to do a KJI?
Let's look at what this is doing right now. So this whole for loop gets iterated through before we move on to J, and then we will change J and then reiterate through all of K, and keep going until we've hit all of those, right? So right here, if we are iterating through K first, we're going to be accessing, like, we're going to be accessing this immediately.
Can I maybe discuss this? Yeah, so I think essentially you'd want to kind of reorder this, the loop sequence. So you probably want k equals 0, k less than, and then I'm not sure if it'd be m. And then after that, you'd want I equals 0, I less than n, and then finally j.
So that's correct. And what Luis has put in the comments is actually also correct. There are two ways that you could fix this, right? So you can either switch the for loops so that the like k for loop is the topmost, and then it's I, and then it's j. You could also change the way that we access this array here and have it be I, j, k. Right? Because then we are accessing memory in that way that stride one reference. So remember that little trick that Ethan had asked about. If we have k here in this like bottommost for loop, we want to have k be the rightmost index, because we're going to be doing a lot of accessing there first before we move on here, and then like continue accessing that. So we want to make sure that we're not accessing something a lot like that's out here, because then we're doing that kind of like jumping around in memory that we don't want to be doing. Does anyone have questions about that? If you ask me to draw you like a three, there actually was a really good link to a three-dimensional array in the first section, and maybe David or Saroj or Matt have it and can throw it in the chat, but I'm not gonna try and draw it. it's intense. Especially, I would maybe attempt it if we had our real whiteboard, but I'm not gonna do it on that electronic one. If we have enough time, maybe I'll try and do it on my iPad and send it to you. Okay, cool. So why is this stuff important, and how does this lead us into the rest of chapter 6? So we have these fundamental and enduring properties of hardware and software. We've got, we know that fast storage technologies cost more per byte and have less capacity and require more power, like heat, and they give off heat, and that's things like the CPU. The gap between CPU and main memory speed is widening, and well-written programs tend to exhibit good locality. And this actually helps us, these properties complement each other really well, and allow us to help design this memory organization system known as memory hierarchy. So now we're gonna get into a good old memory hierarchy pyramid. Let me check, okay, there it is. So here we go. Thanks, David. Share. Okay, so if you guys look at this, here we have a three-dimensional array. So look at this one back here. The way we want to move through this is to be able to hold these first numbers constant, right, and like move through the rows before we change anything else. So hopefully that still makes sense, but it's still more efficient to move through the, you're really moving through the column, like you're moving across columns, but you're moving through the row. I'm trying to be as explicit in that as I can, because I can see how that would be confusing. But you want to be moving this way, right? We talked about how that's like more efficient, and as you can see, like we're keeping other number is constant at that point until we like change them and then access that stuff again. So here we'd be changing. If this was IJK, this would be K. We would increment J and then go through K again. And then we would increment J again, go through K. And then we could increment I, move through K, move, you know, we're going to keep going that way. And I hope that helps. That illustration is like helpful for you guys.
But what is like 000? Is like 111, right?
Yeah.
And then 001 is like 311.
001.
Or zero, yeah, like, yeah. I'm confused. I'm just very confused.
So 000 is going to be like this guy.
This.
So 001 is what you're asking about?
Yeah.
I'm just be this.
This one. Okay. 00. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So, like.
Yeah. Like I said, it's hard to like get good like diagrams of this stuff because it's kind of, it, once you get into like multi-dimensional arrays, it gets a little bit funky. But I think this one's not too bad, so.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go back to our slides. Okay, and we actually have this little Computer Science Illustrated, I guess it's like a little comic, but a little drawing, that is weirdly close to the example that Russell gave. So if you think about, we're gonna start talking about caches and how they're used, and if you think about a computer's, and you think about the way that they access memory, if we compare it to going to a library, so, this little guy is inside your computer. He's going to fetch data from the library. He's going to go do this, like, load some memory. And he finds the necessary information in the page of a book, and then he has to take that all the way back home so that he can do work that involves that information, which seems, like, very inefficient if you've got to do a bunch of work with different pages in that, in different books in that library. But we do have kind of a fix for this. We can use our memory to our advantage and use caches. Computers like don't actually mind doing all this work, but it becomes pretty annoying for users because that means it takes a lot longer, and that can be noticeable time. But we can use caches, which is kind of, I mean, I guess it's similar only in that both the examples use books, but I still think that's funny. Caches are basically like if you were able to keep a copy of each of those books like right next to your desk to work on. So you have this memory that you can pull and hold on to and have it close to you for as long as you need it and as long as you're like accessing it frequently, and then you can switch out that memory with other memory at some point. So having this like little example of like, oh, we've got this library, I have to go to the library, grab some books, but I can bring those books back to my house. And then I have quick access to them when I need them for the duration of however long those books are checked out. And that's, I think, a good little example of how caches work. And I think that actually we're gonna go ahead and stop there. Does anybody have any other questions? Yes, Russell, that is a good point. Libraries are a good way to think of data storage. Cool. I think that, let's see, let me see who all is here. Okay, yeah, if you guys don't have any questions, I won't keep you. If you have, like I said, I think I'm gonna actually go take a nap because I'm pretty beat right now. But if you have Shell Lab stuff, if you want to send an email, and I can jump back on some Zoom stuff like a little bit later in the afternoon. So if you have some specific questions about like what your shell is doing or you need help and you want some help today, just shoot me an email and we'll set up like a Zoom appointment. And then we'll have normal help hours tomorrow again from 1 to 4. And then we'll be able to do a little bit of help, you know, throughout the weekend via email, and the help desk is open, and then on Monday as well. Does that sound good? Cool. All right, thanks guys.
Welcome.
I will talk to you. Is today Wednesday?
Yep.
On Friday, I guess, or you know, maybe later. Okay, thank you.
Take it easy.
Yeah, time has no meaning anymore. It's bonkers. I only know what day it is because I'm currently teaching this section. So it's either a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. But I've been thinking a lot in this. Maybe we'll help you guys. Oh, also, this is something I want to tell you last time, and I totally spaced it. Because everybody's working from home, and this is affecting everyone at this point, there are like a lot of really interesting, if you are interested. I mean, I've noticed the ones that are cybersecurity, but there are a lot of like really cool virtual conferences happening right now. So one of the ones that I went to that was awesome, it was like different topics in InfoSec were the first half, and the second half were like different topics in like, you know, any other thing. So one of them was like firmware and like bubble tea or something. And that one, I think those talks should be up like on YouTube or something. That conference was PancakeCon. There's one going on right now that if you're interested in any kind of like international like cybersecurity or cyber threats or advanced persistent threat actors or cyber warfare, that has a lot of good speakers, called CrisisCon. So definitely if you're looking to like do some running stuff or do some more learning outside of class, now is a great time. You're getting like a lot of really, really awesome people in the field who are giving like free lessons. So take advantage of that. And also, I know this is probably like silly advice, but try and create a routine for yourself. That's what I'm like in the process of struggling with. And it's tough, but I think it is helpful to like try and like get things as close to normal as possible. Having a routine when everything looks the same all the time is weird and hard, but I'm trying. So let's try and keep each other accountable and healthy and all right, then that's it.
Bye.
Okay, bye guys.
Bye.